lots of inquiries and submissions, so that's very heartening and not at all surprising. I think what's happening in the Wikimedia project is kind of new and very unexpected. And anytime you have something new and unexpected, there's obviously a lot to learn from it. And so as social scientists are looking at these sites and trying to understand what's happening and help us understand what's happening, they're also having an opportunity to learn a little bit about human beings themselves, too. So it's very appropriate that we're starting this track with a session on identity and trust. The first speaker that we have, Judith Donath, is... let me say a few nice things about you first. she's really one of the world's foremost authorities on identity in online environments. She's been doing work in this area for a long time. And she's the director of the Sociable Media Group at MIT Media Lab. I just wanted to mention that this is something I didn't know about Judith's work. I'm familiar with it as a graduate student in sociable computing area. You definitely get to know Judith's work. But what I didn't know when I went to go look up a little bit of information is that her work has also been featured in places like the Contemporary Art Gallery in Boston and galleries in New York. So this is someone who's not your typical academic researcher. She's doing work that's very broad, work that is not only looking at our everyday lives, but also giving something back to it. So with that, Judith Donath.
Very nice. It's almost intimidating. But anyway, so yes, I do, just a quick plug for a later session, I do a lot of design work, and a fair amount of it has been done with my graduate students, one of whom is now a graduated student, Fernanda Villegas. We'll be talking in some later sessions about some of the design work we've done, thinking about ways of visualizing things like Wikipedia. I'm not going to talk about any of that today. I'm not even going to show any pictures. So this is the just words version of some of the things I'm thinking about. What I'm going to be talking about today is social connections and information and identity. And as I was starting to think about this talk, one of the first things that came to mind is that there's a bit of identity crisis about wikis. So just to get that out of the way, it's a little bit of a funny topic to have at a conference, because if you think about it, a wiki, there are all kinds of wikis. There are anonymous wikis. There are wikis where people really do feature their names prominently. There are wikis that are open to the public. There's wikis that are contributed to by one or two people. So when I was asked to give a talk about wikis and identity, one of the issues is what is the meat of what makes thinking about it in the context of a wiki different? And the piece that I want to focus on is one, is the collaborative nature of it. What does it really mean to us to be publishing things collaboratively? And then secondly, some of the questions about the identity of writers here and how that's changing very radically. What I'd like to do is start with a little bit of thinking about where we fit into history. You know, this is the very broad version of this. Is there's a for those of you who are, especially who are students writing, there's a very interesting book that I think is worth looking at in connection with wikis. It's called Orality and Literacy by an author named Walter Ong. And his thesis is about looking at what has happened to the ways people think as we moved from a culture of oral traditions where information was passed on through word of mouth to a written word, and then what I think is really useful for us here to be thinking about is what is happening as the whole concept of writing and how writing happens and how publishing happens is being really radically transformed, and wikis are a very good example of that. Now, there's two really interesting transformations in the move from the oral to the written. Is one, when you have an oral tradition, everything has to go by memory. Lots and lots of repetition of things. You have ways of thinking about things in certain patterns to make them much more memorable. You also have a type of group authorship in a way that the wiki moves back towards, because you know there's all this debate, for instance, about whether there was a person named Homer who wrote the Iliad, or whether that was a collective of people who told stories and they were told over and over and over and then coalesced into a known narrative, which is very different than going into Borders and picking up, you know, the latest novel that's really clearly written by that person. Whether or not they plagiarized someone else is a different issue. So we, you know, we always have been thinking collaboratively. It's just that the world of literacy thinks of that as plagiarism, and now we're thinking of it as collaboration. And before, it was about collective memory. So a lot of this is about what your point of view is about how we deal with the contributions of others and originality. But the other part that's very interesting we'll also be talking about today is what type of information became published. So while the technologies to be writing developed slowly over time, so first we had the more formal ones of, you know, laboriously carving something in stone, or a few scribes able to write on parchment, to now where everyone has a computer and can write. One of the other big transformations we're seeing today, and it's written about somewhat less than that tradition, is what type of information gets published. So it's not simply the matter of the writing, but the issue of the publication. And if you look back at a society where everything is passed on orally, it's not only personal information and gossip that you rely on word of mouth to get to you, but simple factual information, like, you know, how do you get to the next village? When will spring come? How do you grow this crop? All had to be passed on from one person to another. And if you have no way of writing this down, you have to become part of a community in order to get any information. You have to have a set of connections with people who will tell you things, or you are going to be completely without information. As publication becomes more and more common, an increasing amount of our information moves into the public realm. So, you know, for instance, religious texts moved into the public realm, different cultural narratives, and all kinds of, you know, useful things, like how to grow these crops get published and things like that. But until recently, we published things like news, we published information, we published things like that, but we still did not publish the extremely personal and the extremely local. We're still in the realm of information that you needed to have social connections to have. So, for instance, if you wanted to know, you know, what the cool person in your high school did last Saturday night, you had to rely on gossip within your high school to know these things. Now you can go to MySpace, and we can all know this. But I think it's a very, very radical transformation, because what we're seeing now is the sort of the last bastion of information that had relied on social connections is now moving into the realm of public information. And I think it's something to think about as we look at what is the meaning of wikis and collective information, because we're starting to see a world in which everything is published and everything starts to be done somewhat collectively. So one of the things I'm very interested in is a lot of the thinking I think quite well done, has gone into thinking about things like Wikipedia, where we have a particular model of the types of information that we have, and what is the nature of truth, what is the nature of objectivity. Now, these are still quite controversial issues, and if you look at many, many, many articles on Wikipedia, you get to see how controversial things that even things that one might think are fairly factual, like did anyone actually land on the moon, you know, are quite up to discussion and debate, name calling, whatever. But as we start thinking about the fact that the types of information that are starting to be published now are things that are extremely subjective, like do I like you, are you a nice person, are you boring, now becomes part of the realm of the public. And not only that, but we are increasingly living out an identity in which that identity is being, A, published online, it's published permanently. We need to be thinking about not just the sort of panic-stricken, is this a good idea or is this the end of Western civilization, but really thinking about what types of media, what types of designs do we want for these different types of information. And I think both looking at the same time things like how do we want to publish personal reputation information and how do we want to be talking about the geology of Peru really forces us to think about why do we care about authorship, why do we care about knowing the sources of information, and really rethinking what do we think is the nature of an authoritative source. Now, let's compare for a minute some of the debates about encyclopedias, traditional encyclopedias, Wikipedia, and MySpace commentary. So in a traditional encyclopedia such as the Britannica, the authority to write a topic, you know, say the geology of Peru, comes from a whole series of official academic designations. You know, you are a known geologist, you have published extensively in this area, the work you have done is peer-reviewed, and so we believe that you are an authority on this subject. Wikipedia, as you all know, looks a little bit more at sort of emergent authority. You may end up with the same writer, you may end up with the same information, you may end up with better information, but there's less of a structure of assuming that existing institutional imprimaturs of authority are the thing that we want to rely on. And instead, we have a whole series of discussion pages that say, well, why do I think this is true? Where can I get the authority here? Which work more or less well. Now, if you look, you know, and I don't want to get, there's a whole conference here on when it works less well, so we can get back to that in a minute. And then we look at something like MySpace commentary, where the type of information is very, very different. It's much more about people negotiating issues of reputation. So let's think for a minute, what is personal reputation? Why do people share this type of information? When we think about reputation in the online world, we have things such as eBay's reputation systems, which are, for eBay, have been very successful. If you look at eBay, you have something where 99% of the transactions are highly successful. If you actually ask people individually, have you ever done anything on eBay and have 99% of your experiences been positive, the percentage seems really different. People talk about, oh my God, I had this horrible experience, they didn't send this thing, they cheated me, and blah, 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 blah. But none of that stuff gets written up. And I think a lot of the reason for that is that it's not really, it doesn't really function as a reputation system per se. It's about a public display of acceptance of the other. And if you look at the relationship between the different parties, it's very, very different than reputation in the face-to-face world. So in something like an eBay transaction, you have two people who have traded with each other. Let's say the experience was pretty iffy from everybody's perspective. But now they're being asked to rate this experience for people with whom they have no relationship whatsoever. And so they risk getting some retaliatory bad comment if they say something bad. They also, and there's also some deeper issues at hand. If you look at the way people deal with reputation in the real world, it's very, very seldom. There's pretty deep social forces that say you don't just walk up to someone to their face and say, you know, I actually don't like you very much. You know, but are more likely to talk to others about this, and our ways of thinking about this are somewhat confused. They're very subtle, though, also, because on the one hand, we have very strong social rules about not gossiping about people, not talking about people behind their back, though people do it all the time. It's one of those things where you can see by the strength of the rules against doing it how prevalent an activity it is. And on the other hand, going up to someone and saying something that may be true, that's very negative to their face, is, you know, we have this whole concept of face as something, like you say, this was a face-saving activity. It's a very offensive thing to do to somebody, and it puts in play, you know, a whole series of reactions. How do they need to either defend themselves or to admit that they are, you know, very inferior to you, that they can accept this insult from you and not do anything about it. So it's a very tense and fraught situation, which in general we try to avoid. So like going back to the online reputation system, we are brought up that if you've had a relationship with someone in general, you don't insult them, even if it was a bad experience. You don't insult them to their face. You insult them behind their back. Yeah, and we're trying to do it sort of subtly, but it's So the reputation systems ask us to do that to people's face. So I think it's a very, very awkward system where there's, in other words, there's a tremendous number of both social and practical reasons why nobody wants to say anything negative. And there's also no relationship between the people who are doing the rating and their eventual audience. You know, for those of you who've ever had to write or read or, you know, indeed be the subject of letters of recommendation, there's always a certain subtlety that goes on there because, again, you have this kind of triangle of relationships that says, here's the person writing the letter, here's the subject of the letter, and here's the recipient. And there's a whole series of different relationships there. If someone is writing about someone they're very close to, you know, a student they've worked with for years and years and years, they're writing a very general letter to people they don't know, their loyalty really lies with this person they've worked with, even though they know that this person has some faults and, you know, the other person's going to discover them. They don't necessarily feel this need to provide this anonymous audience with it. Whereas on the other hand, if someone is asked by a close friend, you know, should I hire this person? You know, I'm going to be living with them for the next, you know, X amount of time. You've worked with them. You're my friend. Tell me, you know, do I want to do this? They're going to get a different type of truth. So a lot of our ways of providing information when it is not in a public realm are very much based on how, on different types of relationships among the parties who are communicating. As we move an increasing amount of our information into a public sphere, and in particular into these different collaboration spaces, a lot of this is lost. And this may be a good thing or a bad thing. I'm not saying, you know, I'm not sitting here saying that this is, it is really, really terrible that people cannot, in this type of space, say horrible things about you behind your back, and you won't know why no one is speaking to you. Perhaps a loss of some of that social manipulation is not entirely a bad thing. But I think what we need to be is we need to be quite aware of what are the social transformations that are coming, that are happening as we change the way we find information. And in particular, one of the things that is very interesting to me is that we are seeing this burgeoning of social networking technologies and this feeling, I think, among a lot of people that we're living in this era of intense socialness and, you know, a world in which you can be in touch with far more people at a time when, rather paradoxically, in terms of having access to information, connections to other people may be less important than they have ever been in history because we have all this publicly available information. And so part of the question is also to understand what is it that we want, how do we want to design things to the extent that we want to retain a lot of the private aspects or a lot of the inherent subjectivity of information, how do we do that type of design? So let's return for a minute to something like wikis. One of the things I think that's going to be very interesting in the ways that we design future versions of them is how do we make them so that our notions of authorship become clearer, or how do we know the sources of our information better? You know, if I think at the moment, if I was going to try and teach literacy to junior high school students, what's the most important thing? I mean, they can read, they can use Google and everything, but the thing that's, I think, missing the most from the ways people use the information resources that we have now is that they tend not to think very much about what is the source of this information, why should I listen to it, why should I believe that? And so I think as we start developing the next generation of wikis, thinking about how to make it so that we can deal in a graceful and interesting way with the type of history, the type of discussion and argument and subjectivity that really exists in something like the discussion pages of Wikipedia, but right now is of interest to a very, very small community of people. Very few people who are looking at that information are reading the discussion to understand how and why particular pieces of it are controversial. They don't really think about what is the authorship of particular pieces. So let's think for a minute about what changes, how can we change some of the design for that? And right now, we're still working in a model that's says the text itself, the text that we're reading, is the primary piece. But if you look at, you know, if you look at a book, you have the title and you have the author. You are fairly aware as you're reading who has written that piece. So, you know, and then there's all kinds of debates within the book world about where things like references and footnotes go. But we have this opportunity here with something like the whole general world of wikis to really rethink where we want the author, information about the author. And so, for instance, and in particular, some of it is to understand, you know, when I started talking, I said, you know, what's different between a Wikipedia article and the comments in MySpace? And the comments in MySpace, again, they're connected to an author, but they're also very much a form of social grooming. That, you know, if you look at them, they're generally quite positive. Their way of saying, hi, I was here, I'm thinking about you, this is what I'm saying about you. The name is very prominent because it's important for that person to know that this other person stopped by. When we look at some articles, it may be very important to know who the author is because we really want to be able to see who's writing this in the context of everything else they have written. And so what I'm getting at here is that as we look at this notion of collaboration, one of the things that we need to understand is when do we want to make collaborative pieces where you have this emergence of a final form. You know, I think that's, to some extent, the goal of Wikipedia, is this emergence of this thing that will be as objective and authoritative as possible out of different pieces that are somewhat less authoritative, but together they have somehow carved this beautiful reality. And that may be a great goal for an encyclopedia, but the world as a whole is not about encyclopedias, and what we need to understand is for all the different types of information that are being published, what's the right way of thinking about what is the role of the author and what do we see of them? To what extent, for instance, do we want to see a collaborative space as that whole series of arguments? Or even in something like an encyclopedia, maybe what's interesting is not to try and reproduce something that has that final authoritative piece, but something that really does let us see all the different perspectives on it. If you look at something like Google News, you know, it's not perfect by far. You know, it's, you know, a little too automated and not quite smart enough, but the idea of each newspaper, instead of trying to be as objective as possible, and they're objective within their very subjective world, but that the way in which you get the most well-rounded information is through a series of different passionately held viewpoints as opposed to a single compromise one is a very, very strong model. And so one of the things we want to think about here is also as we think about information that is not only written by different people, but that has no, where their subjective point of view is what's really, really important about it. So, for instance, if we start thinking about saying that something like wikis are starting to be recordings of entire social groupings, of ways of just sort of the everyday mundaneness of how people live, understanding what the relationship of the different authors is essential for understanding how we want to read those. The other piece of that I think is interesting to think about in my last 3 minutes here is that we are also writing these, that there's an interesting contrast between the model. We have two very interesting models of fame going on right now that I think how they contrast and where they cross over is very interesting to think about. On the one hand, we are living in a time of this very extraordinary move towards collective creativity. There's, you know, all these, there's open software projects, there's things like the different wiki projects where they're about saying, I will quietly create this whole piece within a small community in which I wish to be very well known, but that for the public as a whole, I am not terribly famous. And at the same time, we're living in a world that for various reasons has a unprecedented
fixation on the notion of fame. I think far more than any other writer, I think Andy Warhol, when he said, in the future, everyone will be famous for 15 minutes, was somewhat the great prophet of the web and of reality TV and of the idea that we can live in a world in which attention has become one of the most sought-after resources, and a somewhat scarce resource, but one that people are fighting over in ways that often involve saying, well, the easiest way to get attention is to be shocking or to allow myself to be publicly humiliated. And it's quite extraordinary to look at the ways in which people will try to get that type of attention. So understanding what is it that motivates reality TV on the one hand and this kind of anonymous creativity, I think is very interesting, because to some extent they're both about publication. They're both about getting something of oneself out. And they're both about seeking attention and control of a particular type of intellectual space. So at this, my 20 minutes are up. What we're going to do here is I'd like to leave this. This was more of a setting out of some concepts. I'd like to leave this open for questions that we can get into more depth. Then we'll do another presentation, then do group questions. But if anyone has one or two questions here. Yes?
Okay, I guess I had a couple. First is, of course, we can do it, and in fact, just the internet was in general, there's a superabundance of information and things to read and people to talk to. And how does it affect the way people can process information and interact generally with the community? Well, I had another one, but I guess I'll get
it. No, I guess. For the recording, can you repeat the question?
Okay, so. The question was that in a time when there's a super abundance of information, how do people know where to go? Well, there are many answers to this. I'll give the one that's most related to the theme of what I'm saying, which is that there's still a great deal of social information wayfinding, and that one way of thinking about, as I said, I'd left some of the pieces of the talk open to add into the discussion. So one way of thinking about how do we connect something like why is there reality TV to open source types of things is that in an era in which information is one of the most valuable resources that we have, and obviously other things are important resources, but in an era right now where we have so much technological change, things are changing very, very rapidly in the world around us, whether it's how to work your telephone, where are new streets, what is a new fashion, just the rate of change is completely unprecedented. How you find your way through new information is extremely important. And one of the ways in which people gain status is by different ways of showing off that they are the people who can show you the way to the right information. I mean, wikis and blogs are not quite the same thing, but it's certainly a great deal of the economics of how blogging functions is that if you can be a top blogger, what you're essentially doing is saying, I have gone out and I have found tons of information that is of great interest to people. You do not need to spend the 10 hours that I just spent seeking out that really cool tidbit. I will publish it here, and then you can be part of the army that helps spread this out for the next 12 hours until the new piece of fashion information gets published with our next update or our competitor's next update. So I think there's a great deal of the social that goes into this, how we find information. And so that's one of the ties, is that I think some of the motivation for doing that is attention. And in different ways, the extent to which you can show that you are worthy of attention because you have done something so extreme, or you are able to either show new information, whether it's, you know, through having a well thought out political blog that will, you know, ferret out the most important unknown news stories from around the world, or you can dress in the most extreme fashion that other people can slowly pick up on so that they too can start to seem, you know, reasonably at the forefront of some kind of information. So I think there's a tremendous social aspect of that. Yes?
What do you think of the function of anonymity for social control within a wiki environment? As you say, you know, it's not very nice to say, you suck. But on the other hand, what we see a lot of is people either through just going on with their IP address, or sometimes putting on another identity so that their one that they normally have is hidden. And then they say, you suck. And you have a whole bunch of these anonymous things providing the social feedback that you would have gotten more directly through gossip in a more real-life situation.
I think, in general, real anonymity tends to be very problematic. There's certainly cases, and they're well publicized about being able to be a whistleblower in various situations. But I think it's very, very easily abusable. I think it's important, though, to distinguish between anonymity and pseudonymity, because once we, I did promise I would talk about identity, so maybe I'll talk about it a little bit here. There are many, many different things that can tie you to a single self. Now, you could say someone is identified, and we can say, well, that ties you to a physical body and that one person. Then you could say there is pseudonymity, where you are getting out, generally it's words and ideas or some kind of publication that is by you, but it is not traceable or easily traceable to your real world self. And then there's anonymity, where it's a statement that exists with no tie in terms of authorship to any other. And that they're quite different, because in pseudonymity, presumably, many people can build up a reputation that is still valuable. And to the extent that you have a pseudonymous reputation that you value, you then have costs that can be imposed upon you to that pseudonymous identity. So within a community, you can have a real community of pseudonymous people. You can't have a community of anonymous people. And I think that in the world of sort of that, you suck, as you say, I don't like you, or something like that, a lot of the issues have to do with the willingness to take on the responsibility of saying that. For those of you who are interested in this, I don't have time to get into it here, there's some very interesting literature, which if you're interested, send me a mail, I can send you the references, on things like gossip systems. It was written in the 50s and the 60s. And it's very interesting about looking at the costs people take on in order to say that type of thing. And that, in general, part of the idea, and this is a little bit of that, that model village from way back when social relationships all worked in ways that we've forgotten how to do. But the model, at least, is that people would somewhat build consensus before they confronted somebody else, so that there was much less individual power. Anonymity, in many ways, is about being able to be quite individualistic in what you do. You neither are taking on the responsibility of your own world, and you're also not trying to build the consensus of having the strength to do it with others. So I think while it may be, for each individual, much nicer to be able to communicate anonymously, I think if you're trying to build a long-lasting community, people have to take on the cost of being identified. Okay, I'll take one more question now, and then we'll save some for later.
I think that there's a cultural paradox going on right now between what seems to be the vestiges of romantic creation, romantic authorship, and the individual, particularly in a consumerist economy, where you see people, kind of inflated notion of self that's predicated on buying things and consuming identity, versus the kinds of collaborative network behaviors that are clearly my question to you as an educator is, how do you see us changing the classroom to deal with this very different model? Because as professors, as students, we are ultimately responsible for ourselves, and yet the environment that we live in is most conducive to the kinds of collaborative behaviors that are suddenly being
created. Okay, good try.
I think your question is about, tell me if I'm wrong, is about how, as an educator, do we change the classroom in response to a growing tendency to do things in a collaborative, networked way, where traditional educational models were about take your exam and collaboration is cheating. It's that sort of fine line between plagiarism, cheating, collaborative behavior. I think that some of it is, for one thing, I think it's certainly something that's going to be essential for us to teach students is how to function within this type of collaborative space. If you really, if you feel very strongly about it, does require really rethinking, for instance, how do we think about grading? How do we think, but we also have to really rethink the whole social structure of it. Because when we, I think there's a ways of, one of the things we need to understand is when we look at something being collaborative, there are many different roles that people play. Some of which may be, some people may enjoy being leaders, some people may want to contribute the best that they can, although it's not very good. There are people who may be shirking, there's always, the happy freeloaders. So understanding how we want to deal with those different roles is at the basis of it, and of having, really thinking about having the students both be conscious of that and still finding ways of saying, as we do things collaboratively, people may take on different roles, but some of these are acceptable, and some of these are much less acceptable roles. It's also about, I think, in a classroom experience, in teaching people how to take on those different pieces so that they have a much better understanding of it. We don't have much training in what it means to work collaboratively, We have, again, we have at the same time a very individualistic culture and technologies that help us do things in a very individualistic way. And this idea of saying, well, if we're going to do something as a collaboration, one of the things that happens in a collaboration is you don't get your own way all of the time. And how do people handle that? And then technologically, what are some reasonable responses to that? Because you may feel very strongly, you may be right about it. You may want, that again gets, back to that notion of the discussion page. How do we make that a better functioning way in which people can say, we're creating a whole, and this whole has some dissenting pieces on it, and your ability to look at both the finished product and the dissent from it make it a richer experience. So anyway, I'm going to stop here, and we have our next, I think, do you want to do another introduction? And then we'll have more questions here later. Thank you.
A Wikimania veteran, if such a thing exists, it would be Kathy. She spoke last year about characterizing different kinds of user pages in Wikipedia, so she is back again this year to tell us something about trust in this environment. Kathy Mark.